Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Kasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Kasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right, welcome to Think Big with Dan and Kasim. We have Effie filling in for Kasim today, and our guest is Dr. Dan Cohn. So, Dan, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us where you live and what you do for a living.
Okay. I live in the Twin Cities area, the suburbs of Minneapolis, and essentially I invent and market things. So I've been doing that ever since I became a doctor and then became a neurologist. I decided to move into business and work on medical products as opposed to going into practice.
So what made you want to go into business? Because I feel like most doctors, they go into medical school just for practicing, but you kind of, essentially made that pivot right away.
I went into medical school knowing that I probably was not going to practice. I had a real interest in brain versus mind. And I was a firm believer that there was more to mind than came out of brain. And so, and that was not the dogma that medical school and residency teach you. They teach you that no, all of mind comes from brain. And so I figured I would go to medical school and ultimately become a neurologist, which I did. And therefore, nobody could tell me I didn't know what I was talking about if I went through all that training and I had that credibility. I figured I could then do research and make some discoveries that would be helpful.
Makes sense. So in terms of when you first started working as an entrepreneur and inventing things, what was your biggest challenge?
I think my biggest challenge was that I was a doctor. And I remember going to the lawyer who incorporated us back in 1982, the days when we started CNS Inc. And he said, right off the bat, he says, I think doctors can be really good business people. He says, my brother's a doctor and he's also a good business guy. And so I don't have the bias that other people, have. But, when he introduced us to venture capitalists and the like, there was a built-in bias. They figured, oh no, you're a doctor. You can't be good at business.
That's interesting. Because imagine us the doctors, all the schooling, all the work, you're smart people and you know how to work hard. Like being an entrepreneur, you have to be dedicated, working 80 hours a week. That's what you were doing for 8 years, medical school and residency. And then fellowship, if you did that, it's kind of funny how they'd have that bias against you.
Well, you're right, because a lot of it is just hard work and learning. But they figure if you didn't have the schooling and you didn't understand finance, for instance, or you weren't trained in marketing, that you couldn't be good at it. Meanwhile, really good doctors are also really good salespeople.
Yeah, for sure.
They have to sell their services. They have to convince their peers they're good for referrals. So, they should judge the person and say, wait a minute, this person can do more than just be a mechanical robot.
Yeah, 100%. Now, you mentioned also, and I was looking up in your website and your LinkedIn profile, Soltech, and then you had CNS, which you sold to Glaxo in 2006. You want to just maybe go over those two inventions you created?
Sure. Well, when we started CNS Inc. back in 1982, we built the first automated brainwave monitor to help prevent strokes during high-risk surgery. And here's a perfect example of the bias against doctors, in terms of business. And we built the machine, we tested it at the Mayo Clinic, we validated it, it was 100% accurate versus the manual reader. And so it could literally predict that this person was going to have a stroke while they were on the table. Wow. And then and we took it through the FDA, we got it cleared. And then I went out with the sales force during the first 3 months to do product demonstrations in the operating room. And after 3 months of that, I came back to the next board meeting and I told them, I said, hey guys, I said, this product's going to fail. And they said, why is that? And I said, because it pins the blame on the doctor in the operating room, the surgeon. I said, right now, if they have a stroke on the table, they don't know about it until they wake up in the recovery room. And I said, now we're going to pin the blame. They said, what are you talking about? I said, well, the surgeons would pull me aside after the demo and say, hey, you know, I really like your product. Can you take out the disk drive? I said, no, I said, that's the medical record. He goes, yeah. He says, that's what I don't want. So I told him it wasn't going to work. And our venture capitalist on the board said, what do you know about this? You're not a sales guy.
But you're a doctor.
I said, okay. I said, I'm going to take the hardware platform and I'm going to take this into the field of sleep medicine and automate that field because it's a young growing field. And I said, they could use the help. And they said, well, that'll take you 10 years. I said, better not, because you won't fund us for 10 years. And so it was interesting because the next year, without having a product, I outsold the 8 salespeople who were selling the OR product, and I didn't even have a product.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's crazy. That's so cool. Wow. And so then after you sold CNS, and then you created Soltech now. How was that experience?
Well, it was good. Well, there was an interesting transition, though, in CNS, because, okay, you know, we had to go public early in CNS because we essentially did it because we needed the money.
Okay? Oh,
so we were a very small public company, but we were a capital medical equipment business, basically automating sleep labs. And the sleep lab business was growing nicely, and it could grow much faster with our technology. But one day this guy walks into my office with this new product concept. And it was, he showed me the prototype, and it was a Curad Band-Aid with a piece of plastic glued on top of it. And as soon as I saw it, I fell in love with it. I licensed it, but I did it without telling my board of directors because I knew they would go crazy. Because here we were, a publicly held capital medical equipment business. And here's this guy licensing a nose Band-Aid, you know, for consumers. You know, and when I finally did tell them, they freaked out and they said, well, you like this so much, you run this division and hire somebody to replace yourself in the sleep business. And I said, fine. I said, I'll do it. So I had to transition the business essentially to a consumer products business. And then I launched the Breathe Right nasal strip.
Wow. That helps a lot of people. I know my dad uses that actually.
Yeah. No, I use it every night.
Yeah. Wow, that's crazy. Now, with all these, challenges with the venture capitalist, what was then, I guess, what was now, like, one of, like, your biggest challenge, and maybe ongoing, or maybe you've fixed it, of getting into business? Was it just dealing with the capitalist, or?
No, I mean, in this business, I mean, look, we did really well with the sale of CNS. So yeah, we sold that for $566 million. You know, it was a nice sized business and very profitable. And so my partner and I decided that we would take $10 million and invest it on solving a problem that I learned about in my first year of medical school, which was 75 to 90% of all medical problems are either caused by or made worse by stress.
Yes.
Yeah. So I would ask my professors, well, why don't we treat stress? And I get all sorts of reasons as to why it was impossible to do, you know, and they weren't wrong.
Yeah.
And I said, well, we need to invent a way to do this.
Yeah.
And so when we started out the new business, you know, we had the funding because we supplied it ourselves. So that wasn't the issue. The problem was, can we actually do it? You know, because nobody up until this point had been able to do it, to create a technology that would essentially reduce stress without the user having to learn to meditate or take the time to do a relaxation practice, you know, because, you know, the medications affect too many neurotransmitters,
sure,
not just those that cause stress. And there's no other way to get at this part of the nervous system because, I mean, we're literally dealing with a part of the nervous system that's right in the middle of the brainstem, you know. And so, you know, you've got to be able to figure out, how am I going to get at this area and cause this activation of the parasympathetic division versus the sympathetic division of the autonomic nervous system? Okay. Which probably may make no sense to you, but it's a very primitive part of the brain. And how do you entrain that area to become active? So that was the biggest challenge. And then And then when we ran out of that $10 million, then we solicited investment, but I wouldn't allow VCs into the business. So I would only take in, you know, friends, relatives, business associates, vendors to the company, and angel investors who were sympathetic to what we were doing.
That's cool. Now, also, like, since we, you know, we're entrepreneurs, and for other entrepreneurs, what's like one, just from all those different experiences, what was like one key takeaway you would tell someone, like advice for someone who's trying to start their own business?
You know, I like to work in reverse. So look, if you're working in a field that, you know, you're just going to make another product that's like other products out there, that's one thing. Then you know there's a market for it. But I always liked to work on products that were truly innovative, and therefore there was no market. So so for me, it was, I would look at an idea and say, okay, how am I going to create the market for it, you know, after I develop the product? Because if I couldn't figure out a way to create the market, you know, or if there wasn't a need for the product, then it was like, whoa, that's a problem. There's no sense in trying to invent something that you can't sell. So, so, you know, so it was really funny, because the VCs would always say, well, you know, you're not a business guy. And, you know, in a sense, you know, look, when I started out, I couldn't read a balance sheet, but I learned pretty fast. I mean, after all, it's not that hard. But yeah. the bottom line is, I always was sort of a natural marketer. And so to me, it was figure out how you're going to market the product and then, you know, make the product.
Interesting. Makes sense. Now, also now, like, and you've had success with CNS Inc. and then Soltech now seems to be doing really well. What's like a typical day like for you?
Well, it's all over the map. It depends, because I like to work in a lot of the different aspects of the business. So, you know, I'm heavily involved in the research and development. I like the clinical stuff. I really enjoy the sales and promotional stuff. I mean, back when I launched BreedRight, you know, when we got it into distribution, Procter & Gamble saw the product and they wanted to buy it from us right away. Oh, wow. And so they brought me to Cincinnati and they had me give a talk to their new business development group. Mm-hmm. And this was pre-internet. This was 94. Mm-hmm. And I gave my talk to them, and then the head of new business development at P&G got on stage with me, and he says, you're a public company. You only got $10 million in the bank. So we are the world's expert at launching a consumer product, and it costs $50 million to do it. You can't do it. Let us take over the product. And I said, no, I got an idea. I want to see if we can make that fly. If not, I said, we'll sell you the product, you know, so, you know, you'll have first dibs at it. Hmm. And, you know, but, you know, our plan was to launch it with PR and football players. And we had already seeded the media with knowledge of the product. And so our only job at that point was, you know, get the NFL trainers to adopt it and start putting it on football players, because they needed to breathe better through their nose because they had a mouth guard in their mouth, you know? And so, so we got that to happen. And then the thing launched overnight, you know, once that happened.
That's amazing.
That makes sense. So as of right now, what role does technology play in your business?
Well, you know, we've developed a new technology. So you'd have to say it's 100% of our business, you know, in addition to using technology in our business. But so it's really vital. And I mean, all of us use our technology. So that's really important. You know, we have to make people understand our technology. So it's a huge part of our business.
So are you using artificial intelligence? Are you looking into that in terms of trends for your business?
Do we do some machine learning? Yes. Would you define that as artificial intelligence? I guess some people would and some people wouldn't. So I guess if you do, then the answer would be yes. We do use that in some of our algorithms to figure out the likelihood that, you know, you're in dream sleep versus light sleep and those kinds of things. But otherwise, we don't use it to generate our written materials. For instance, we don't use ChatGPT. You know, we consider ourselves pretty good writers. And so we like to craft messaging ourselves and be careful with it. And we like to test that with our market. So we like feedback from our market. We like we're more of a throwback kind of company, in the sense that, you know, right now you talk to most entrepreneurs about marketing and they immediately, everything's digital. You know, I'm going to run these ads, I'm going to track the data, and I'm going to do all this stuff. And, you know, digital marketing has gotten very expensive. But you know what it costs if you buy an email list, you know, to target somebody? 2 cents. You know, typically it's 2 cents a lead. And if you're a good writer and you could write an enticing subject line and a good first paragraph or a good first sentence in your email, you know, you can get an open rate that's 40%. That's far greater than you're going to get in terms of your digital marketing. So we spend a lot of time crafting emails, sending them out, testing them, looking at open rates, and then looking at conversion rates. Because when you're talking about that kind of pricing, it's far more cost effective. Our return on investment is far greater. I mean, we don't have a negative ROI on our marketing. Okay. And I like to market for free, especially when you have innovative products, because once you do enough of that, then you get the press involved. That's all free. I mean, what we're doing right now, why am I on with you guys? I mean, you guys aren't charging me, right? So it takes a little bit of my time, but this is going to reach thousands of people. They're going to hear about this thing. Some of them are going to go to our website, www.soltechhealth.com, right? They're going to go look at it and say, hey, you know, I got a sleep problem or I got a stress problem. I got to look into that. 60-day money back guarantee. I'll probably get a couple sales out of this, right?
For sure. So early on, you know, I guess was there like a certain reason why you wanted to start your business, you know, living where you live in the Twin Cities? I think all these people think, oh, I need to be like in New York or certain cities to raise money. Did that ever cross your mind? Or do you ever have challenges based on where you live?
No, you know what? Most people don't realize this is kind of medical Mecca. I mean, you have phenomenal medical companies in the Twin Cities. So it's a great pool of talent in terms of engineering, both hardware and software, medical innovation, great manufacturing talent in terms of, you know, being able to find the right outsourcing candidates, great vendors. You also have good retailers headquartered here. I mean, you know, we recently signed a deal with Best Buy, you know, to sell our product. They're headquartered right down the street. Okay. So, you know, Target's headquartered here. So there's a huge benefit to being in the Twin Cities. And, you know, I mean, the Twin Cities is a sizable population.
For sure. So what would you say is your top priority for your business in the next 3 to 6 months?
It's pretty straightforward. We're in what we call pre-launch phase. So we're selling product now, but we're not actively promoting it yet. So we have hundreds of back orders that we're getting out there. We're working, you know, a lot of these people already know us. So we're getting the product out. We're working through the final stages of refinements, that kind of stuff, you know, working through our systems, you know, NetSuite and getting all that organized, doing our early market outreach, you know, to set up an affiliate network where people can go to for demos, you know, and learn about the product that way. We're also planning our international strategy because this product will go global very quickly. So all of those things are taking place. And then the actual launch, so to speak, will happen early next year.
I know I kind of asked this before, but about like what a new entrepreneur should do, but like, what was the biggest thing that you wish, biggest advice that you wish you had learned or knew before you started your entrepreneurship journey? Slightly change of question, like what would you wish you'd learned, like you knew before, and so they would have maybe prevented some problems from occurring when they did?
I think it's important for the entrepreneur to understand what's going to happen when they lose control, and you know, and how does that factor into their decision-making process in terms of fundraising and the kind of deals they sign. Most entrepreneurs, particularly with their first venture, they usually get into trouble in that arena. And part of that relates to when they raise money, how judicious are they with expenditures, keeping things small, using contract workers as opposed to employees. That's a really big problem. People like to hire people, and it's much better to work with, you know, outside resources that you can, you know, pay on an hourly basis and not have the obligation of having them employed. So I like to keep employee counts really, really low, in the early stages, until you can afford to actually hire people and not lose money. So I like to shoot for profitability very early in the operation and look for tactics that will be profitable. And part of that also relates to pricing. I find most entrepreneurs don't value their products high enough. You can always come down, you know, but it's really hard to go up. And so I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs who've got products on the market and their margins are too low for them to ever get to profitability. And as a result, they have to keep raising money and then they lose all their ownership to venture capitalists. And the venture capitalists have a time limit for their fund. And so all they're doing is thinking about exit strategies. And before you know it, they've sold out and the entrepreneur walks away with whatever they can get.
I guess it's like a lot of those tech companies, they grow, they're looking at growing as opposed to actually profitability.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's the kiss of death. As soon as you see that, you know, there's a problem. You know, you should shoot for profitability and justify your growth. And a lot of that then makes you much more disciplined in terms of hiring people that are going to help you get there and who think like that, who are very cost conscious, because you don't want this kind of expenditure. And you see these firms raising $100 million and immediately doubling their workforce, and they're still not making money.
Yeah, it's true. That's true.
Like, what are you doing?
And you mentioned also with like when you lose control, I guess like that's why with founding Soltech, after you ran out of the initial funding, you said you spoke to like angel investors, family, friends, because you didn't want to like deal with the VCs, and I guess they have different agendas than you may have. Is that what you mean?
Well, they have different agendas, and you know, to be quite blunt, I've not found the VCs to be good decision makers in terms of making the right decisions, you know, because so many of their decisions are based on how am I going to exit this deal versus how am I going to turn this deal into something that's really successful and desirable. And as a result, you know, depending on when they come into the fund, I mean, those funds are typically have a 10-year lifespan. And if they come in year four, then, you know, you got to plan on an exit within 6 years, you know, to satisfy them. And again, I was lucky in the early 80s to deal with VCs that were older and had a lot of operational experience. But these days, you get these younger people come in, they don't have any practical experience. And then they're telling you, I mean, I got 40 years of business experience. I don't need a 30-year-old telling me what I should be doing when, you know, he or she has no experience.
Yeah, makes sense.
So, if we're going to have this conversation again in 1 year from now, where do you expect things to go for Soltech?
Well, by then, I think we'll be a multinational company. And, you know, I think we'll be extremely profitable. I think we'll be a brand name that a lot of people already know about. I think a lot of people will say, I've got to get me one of those devices. I'm not sleeping well enough, or I've got too much stress. And I like what that thing does. And especially at night, because all I have to do is turn it on, you know. So I think it's a whole different game, because we will have launched, and so there'll be a lot of awareness.
Do you think are you planning, or you expect Soltech to go public?
Well, it's a good question. The current technology we're launching is a consumer product, so we don't need FDA clearances for stress reduction or improved sleep. However, there are medical applications to this technology as well. And so right now we're having a debate inside the company is, do we split it into two companies, one that's consumer-based and one that's medical-based? And if we do, given the time horizons for the medical side and the amount of studies that we would do up front, that might be ideal to be a public company. So we may take that part public and leave the consumer part private. We'll just have to see, you know, what we do. But that decision hasn't been made yet.
Okay.
Well, if you guys do go public, I'm definitely going to be investing in your company. So we're going to wrap this up, but can you again mention your website again? And what would be the best way for anyone to reach you, reach Soltech?
Yeah, I think the website is Soltech, S-O-L-T-E-C, health, you know, .com. And there's a hello at Soltech Health email address. So best way to reach me is through that. Essentially, go through the website, take a look at the technology, get an understanding as to what it is. And, you know, I'm happy to respond to you.
Great.
That's great. Well,
thanks so much, Dr. Dan. Pleasure talking to you. We had a great time. I hope you have a great day.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.